Just wondering what I'm seeing that the decision on the amendment. And they show that, or just get a termination for CPC. And then, question, and then get a, as well from the department. And all of that, and then the change of the result of the recommendation that we made by the ad hoc committee that was established at Halal. To give a point to our looking to the report of the audit and the analysis report and the participants.
evaluate policies, assessments, make recommendations to parliament and its nations, investigate children's campaigns. On the social and research and education programs, as well as other duties and responsibilities that other institutions might impose on the DG. So this contract is brought in the 100-year movement that changed the legal mandate for the institutional mandate. At present, change of the word form to replace form. Also in terms of the amendment to change in one year, the definition of the constitution is sponsored by the CPP, the amendment to the act, the terms of section 1C in the constitution, so the Minister for Women's Children and People for Disabilities, that is sponsored. Those are the technical changes in box 2 of the amendment law. So it is causing our change. In terms of the definition, the DG is proposing that the additional definitions be inserted into the Act through the amendment law. We have numerous definitions. I will go through the definitions and you will see that they are important definitions which align the Act to visitors and other children. The first definition that we want to be inserted is the word act, which means the provision for the recall of the Act 39 of 1996. The second definition is the reference to chairperson, which means a provision of funds in terms of section 3, subsection 9 of the CDC Act. We want another definition, namely the provision, which means the provision for gender equality established in terms of section 21 and 27 of the Constitution of the Republic of Africa. The next definition we want to insert is complaint, which means in allegations of anti-discrimination based on gender, as on the basis of section 9, subsection 3 of the Constitution. The next definition we want to insert is gender, and the definition we want to is a place with a social construct based on both expectations of women, men, which are culturally, socially, and economically prescribed. Thus, in the field of the expectations to have a discriminatory effect on the person. The next definition is gender equality, which means that all men and women conserve all rights and freedoms to extend, where they are able to enjoy equal achievement and opportunities to have social, political, economic, cultural, political, other rights and opportunities. The eighth definition that we use for is gender equity, which is supposed to mean that distribution of rewards and opportunities to women and girls boys. The next definition, the ninth one, gender discrimination means any distinction, exclusion, or restriction on the basis of gender which has an effect on impairing recognition, enjoyment, or exercise of any person of any right contemplated in the Bill of Rights. The tenth definition that we wish to have interpreted is investigation. Means any investigation completed or undertaken to the policies and practices of any person, entity, organization, or public state relating to the conduct or state, that may impact or have any effect on gender in terms of section 11, subsection 1, paragraph E, and section 12, F, in a manner deemed necessary by the Commission. The 11th definition that we want is organ state, which we excise from the Constitution, which means an organ state. Organ state is from Section 39 of the Constitution. Also, the insert is the URA, meaning the Commission of Equality and Prevention of Anti-Discrimination Act 94 of 2000. The 13th definition, Finery, which is supposed to mean obviously the Commission of Equality and from Section 5. Of the Act, which constitutes the discriminating authority of the Commission. The 14th definition, CPRR, between policies, principles, rules, and regulations as promulgated by the Commission for Gender Equality. Now, here, what you find is that promulgated as Act is supported by regulations, and in terms of the Commission of Gender Equality, we are not a government department. So, some things that we promulgate our own regulation, and this is what the future are supposed to be. The complete definition is transfer, which includes any land, any road, public or private, state, building, or structure, vehicle conveyance, ship, aircraft, vehicle, or container. And secretariat, which means chief executive officer and to the operation that changes the reputation, which is more of a substantive nature. And I would go beyond the technical changes that are supposed to be reinvented for. The new policy, PDE for Section 2, Section 1 of the Act, where the Citizens Commission is determined by the President. Now, this is not simply the intent of the Commission, as it is based in Section 1, Section 3 and 4 of the Constitution. And the Commission wishes to propose that the Citizens Commission must be determined by the Commission itself. This makes it clear. Section 3, Section 4 of the Act, the section provides for a maximum of 12 commissioners. The commission is proposing that the maximum of 10 commissioners be appointed, inclusive of the chairperson, which will allow for one commissioner to be assigned for problems. So, officially, it sounds as well as in Philip, politically, which is as well. It is also proposed that 7 full-time and 2 part-time commissioners be appointed, and the chair is additional. And also, what we've indicated earlier, that the term of office of a commissioner should be seven-year term, and it should be renewable. In keeping with the African Human Rights Commission Act, which provides for 7-year renewal for term. Section 3, Section 6 of the PDE Act. What the Act provides for is for part-time commissioners to be appointed as full-time commissioners should be the circumstances of demand. Now, this is the sign that the PDE believes that also when a full-time commissioner needs to be or wants to be converted to a part-time commissioner, the Act should allow that as well. And this is the case of flexibility and also changing the circumstances which arise in commission as well as commission. And this is subject to the circumstances that allow for such changes to take place. Also, you find the CPU support the appointment of the chairperson by the president, which is different from the Selecting Human Rights Commission Act, which allows the members of the commission itself to appoint the chairperson. Section 4, Section 3 of the Act, CPU recommends insertion of clauses C and D, which address the difficulties with resignation of the relations of the chairman on the floor. Now, this is plain. E and D is a submission document. Let's look at the case of our submission. It's had that citizen. Proposed amendment to Section 4 of the PDE Act by Commission. We are saying that PDE proposes an amendment to the simple act that is addition of Section 4, Section 6, Paragraph 2 and E, which provides the following. See, what we are saying is Commission is sent that an appointment be made in terms of Section 3, Section 6, so that the name of a part-time commissioner to perform the function of any full-time or another part-time commissioner. And the assertion that we are proposing is as follows. The commission will also request that full-time commissioner be appointed as a part-time commissioner within the agency or such agencies as circumstances exist that deem this necessary. Any of the appointment in terms of section may commence immediately after any commission has solicited a resignation to Parliament or within 30 days of the 15 days in terms of the session. Now what we find is that should a resignation occur and the vacancy exists in the commission, then the process of appointment will start all over again. There will be a nomination, there will be a proposal, there will be interviews, and then we'll go to the president, and this takes a long time. So in order to The commission then can recommend the references appointments as we explained here, so that relationships can be built in the least possible and in a lawful manner. So that's the rationale behind those amendments. Because in the past we've had occasions where for over 18 months, commissions have not been appointed purely because the process is long, tedious, and it's wielded. So these amendments would obviate those untenable circumstances. And it's necessary for consummate legal governance and the responsibility for the commission to be fulfilled. Because in the absence of the commission, we find that the duty then has to be discussed among the existing commissions, and that's basically demanding the commission and commission itself. The commission is following the decision to revise. In case of, for instance, the relations exist and are not supported. And also section 5 of section 6, the commission is proposing a greater construction of what the existing station intends to provide. Now, if you look at our submission, and there we are speaking to section 5 of section 3, to read the following. The quorum for any meeting of the commission shall be resolved if the total number of commissions appointed in terms of section 3.1 and 2, or the full complement of commissioners related to this, and has not been called. Alternatively, the number of commissions available and agreed upon as constituting the quorum at each committee. So, this insertion actually makes the number of commissioners offensive. To take decisions that are lawful, the other the validity of the decision taken in the absence of commission reserved. Decision 5 and decision 6, this is what the commission is proposing. The commission now from time to time, the notice make known that to the procedures in terms of Section 5 or any other procedure by promulgation of its policy, practices, rules, and regulations hereinafter, referred to as CGE 2RNR. Now, we find that exactly this way, the validity of opposition is taken where vacancy is arrived. So, this section is intended to hold a gap. So, in the absence of provision, you have valid decision taken. And this provision allows for the commission to speak to those instances where commissions are not present and the juristic nature of the commission to be preserved. But the moment that the commission is a juristic person, and if commissioners are absent or don't have the full complement of commissioners, it could be a constitutional challenge that the commission is illegal. So this amendment, or the so-called amendment, will address that aspect of the gap. Section 7. The CCE is recommending an insertion to the existing act. Form of Section 7A. Now, 7A reads as follows. Regulations must be enacted within 3 months of promulgation of the Act to set out the differentiation, functions, powers, roles, and responsibilities between the state and commission. That is necessary to effective, efficient fulfillment of the obligations of the commission. I find that the commission has of two levels. The commissioner and the secretariat, and we have included in the definition the secretariat. And again, this is the act where the situation is not taking place, not spoken to. And this is the necessity for the operation of the commission. That is why the commission is making that proposal. And this has problem begins to conflict our vision of the commission. Section 7, position 1A. Find the definition of the PGX is unconstitutional as it undermines the CGs and stability, CG trust and CEO. They put the CG proposed A in the vision of Section 7, Section 1. I find that the section concerns requires the Commission to actually appoint the CEO in consultation with other parties of the state, public service commission, and Minister of Finance. Now, whether this is a necessity for the consultants to be consulted, but it's being unnecessary for the Public Service Commission to be consulted, because the Commission is independent and not a state department, or the Commission is not a state department. And there could be the circumstance where the Public Service Commission to be saved to the Commission, to candidates to be appointed. So that undermines the independence as to our position only one of the Constitution and should be upheld in the act. Section 7, 1, paragraph D, the city recommends an expansion to ensure suitable candidates are appointed at senior levels of CEO. In other words, the existing provision in the CEO Act allows the CEO to appoint all members of staff, including very senior members. So the commission feels that it needs to be in a limited way to be a strict manner when such a person is taken. Section 7, subsection 1, paragraph C, the commission seeks to have these insertions to align the CG Act, subsection 1, page 1 of the Constitution, allowing the commission itself to determine the salaries and benefits of staff. And the process will be done in consultation with Parliament if necessary. Section 7, subsection 3, C and D. It usually recommends that these sections are unconstitutional. This is okay for this.
That's why we are recommending that those issues be removed. It is unconstitutional.
that he had today. Section 7, subsection 4 and 5. The teacher recommends what these subsections he substitutes the provisions as dealing with the needs of the commission that are necessary to align with the pure and incident of his intentions. Now, these sections allow for the supplements of the State Department to the commission. And that will undermine the importance of commission, because these commissions monitor the State Department. So it can't possibly have supplements from these State Departments. But rather, the Act allows for these words to be confronted by the commission when it's accepted. So that's the imbalance that exists. So section 7, 4 and 5 are necessary and conflict with the constitution. So that's why the PD is recommending those deletions. Section 8, subsection 1. We're proposing that you ignore that that proposal because it's an error on the power of representation. So I want you to do that. Section 8, Section 3. Okay, this is here. This needs some explanation. It's a CGA recommended substitution to the petition because salary of commissioners are obviously determined when they are appointed. Now, this would be a situation that you understand it fully. It's an introduction to the Act, the DG Act, the existing Act, gives the following. If a part-time member of the commission may, for inferior in which that member of the approval of the commission performs additional duties and functions, you take such additional remuneration as may be determined by the president. So, what I'm saying is that if a part-time commissioner is allocated additional responsibility, then obviously you have to pay an additional amount. And an act is requiring the president now to come to them. It has to go through a long process before that approval is made. However, what we are saying is that the salaries of the commissioners are determined by the appointment. And those salary scales are in existence, it's known that it's being applied. So if the commissioner is changed, is assumed from a part-time to a full-time position and additional duties, so it's just an addition and administrative process to pay the additional amount, because it's nothing new. The challenges are existing and it should be necessary for the president to redetermine salaries because there's no redetermination to be made. So we hope that this stands out the committee. Section 9 of section 1. If you propose to say condition to the left part of the session, because it states that the and our agency expenditure incidental to the performance of the functions of the commission in terms of this act or in other law shall be paid from money appropriated by Parliament in the same manner for the necessary changes and subject to the same laws as is the case of the expenditure of the Department of the National Government. Now, qualification is expressly stated here that you will be used in the same manner as the State Department. Now, that's unconstitutional because the Commission must not be seen as the State Department. So that should be explained. Section 9, Section 2 of the Act, paragraph 8. CG proposed an inversion, which you can read in the submission, which allows for the delegation of authority by the CEO to other officers within the commission. In other words, we are just including a provision that allows the delegates to allow non-protest rules applied to the commission. which is an anthem that Jews have lost. It's the end of the Living Acts. The video composes the inversions and substitutions in the line of TDS of special standards of independence is 10 to this position 181.
Which most of the time Thank you.
Now, so the sun, a minute is a very to when we set up a commission, the local therefore, the local government is a commission. So the rules and the
healthy, run, or what's the position, but who wants to leave part-time
faith and the reservation that entirely is on the covenant of faith or parliament. So that's the conflict in the act itself. The termination of salaries and the invasion of staff in the act of the commission. And also, once you validate it into contract with any party, you can't go and rely on the contract. That's not constitutional in terms of Section 23 of the Constitution. The commission will be struck with lots of pain of unfair labor practice. So I can't understand how such a provision exists because it's unlawful. And we are escaping that liability because it's because we don't apply those sections. They are implicit. And should we apply it, we'll be faced with lawsuits every other day of the year. So that's the reason why I'll explain that. The lady needs to be removed. Thank you.
That's it. There's not only the vision of training, but there are also the members of the community commission on the community commission. So that's what we're doing. Second, again, what we're going to do is to put government on this year. There's a new special commission to go to the city and to the city and to the community commission. So we're just going to have a lot of people to make sure that we're going to participate in the development.
Thank you.
I think Committee an idea
that we have started, and this is where we are. But even if we can, I don't know when Parliament is, January is opening, we will be willing to come and actually give a detailed report of the turnaround. And perhaps we spend the whole morning discussing that. Thank you.
Hearing what the minister is saying, we are definitely not going to have the fulfillment of what happened in the past 3 months on the turnaround strategy. If we lean into them in the department, and let's ask them to come back, give them more time to come back with a detailed turnaround strategy of what they did from where we started on this to where we are now. Let's be lenient for them, and let's give them that fair chance so that they can come back and inform us of exactly what was done, and that we can actually, you know, to also allow us to match it with what was here. Is that the way?
Yes, we would be happy to do that, and we want to thank the honourable members for giving us that opportunity.
Same for that, and by then it would have even gone through the audit committee. There is, however, I think constraint we would like to present on the second quarter report. Yes. So we find that the turnaround would be talking to the solution to the problems that are coming up or that are related at the quarter 2-4. So as I present the second quarter performance, I'd like to just request the committee to give them the best of their mind. I would also like to just agree on the format, whether you want it to be detailed, as Minister has indicated, you know, on the presentation of the turnaround. But we'll leave that when we discuss it then. You want the details? Chair, the context of the second quarter was, you know, the government had taken long to finalize the audit process, so it spilled over a little bit into the second quarter. And we also weighed the process of identifying problems and developing the turnaround plan. We were also busy with finalizing the annual report. We also reviewed our strategy focus and prepared inputs for the MCAF and the AEME processes. The strategy plan for 2012-13 was revised. 2012-13 to 2014-15 was revisited with all the branches and also consulted the National Treasury. And so I think for the first time we really had feedback from Treasury in terms of comments or in terms of what they think about that is in our strategy plan. And we followed, in compiling the overview or the quarterly report of the second term, we followed the AE format of allocating the scores instead of saying zero would mean that it's not achieved, and one would mean that it's partially achieved, and two means that it's fully achieved. the overall performance of the organization is 9% red, and we appreciate that this is not good, which is what gave the basis for us to say, let's work on a turnaround plan, what can we do? And in the turnaround, one of the objectives is to improve performance and make sure that we achieve all our targets. And in that regard, the APP has been revised for the remaining part of the year. The turnaround, the strategy plan has been updated as well, and also aligned to the MTF cycle. And we try to make sure that the document is now smart, as we know that one of the findings was that our targets were not smart. With regards to internal control, we've made sure that we remember last time when we presented, we said we're in the process of developing a performance management policy. That policy has been approved, and it's being used now to guide the compilation of planning information, budgets, and reporting. We've also implemented controls, monitoring controls to ensure that funding expenditure is within the allocated funding. As we know that we're coming from an era where we had overspent, but in the second quarter, we were still in that phase as we had not received more money. But you'll see at when CFO presents the findings, the financial information, the situation has now improved. We also appointed staff on management at management level. As we know, we're joined by the DDG, where in July, and internal audit as well. With regards to governance, we also finalized the risk management policy. The risk register, although it's not what it's supposed to be shared, but it has now been developed, because initially it didn't exist. It has now been developed. It's been consulted in the assistance of National Treasury as well. We also have an anti-fraud management plan, which the audit committee is looking at. Management has also been involved with risk management, in the sense that we held a workshop with SMS members, and as I've indicated, this is still a process that needs improvement, but this is taking place. However, with the turnaround, Chair, we'll then report in terms of where we are, that we will be giving you our finalized risk register that shows you what risks have been identified, what controls have been put in place, and all of that. Okay, so going into the program, program one, there we just talk about, I'll just go straight into what the performance information looks like. In summary, and we've done two slides where we combine quarter one and quarter two to give the committee a mid-term performance review picture. And indeed, it's not looking good. For program one, we only managed to achieve 42% of the target. That's now for the two terms. Program two is 46%. Program three is 62%. That one is a bit better change. And then program 4 is 23%. That's now we combine the two quarters. And overall, the department has only achieved 43%. And I'd like to remind the committee.
and then what you ask, but I'm not asking on behalf of this father, is that not why we have a detailed report from the Convention Union, which is the Convention Is that not the reason why we ask when everything must be visualized on what happened, what was done for them to reach that 31%, which we still really didn't know. Then they can learn to play the actual playing role, activities that happen, whatever.
Okay. Because part of the focus report, part of the turnaround we'll see is if it includes a catch-up plan, for instance, on his targets addressing this low performance, especially for COP. Because remember the organization is still in early days when the minister was telling my team. It's not normal that within the first 3 years of your establishment then you have turnaround, but because we've had a lot of administrative challenges, the department has had to have a turnaround. So, but most on call, you find that it's mostly a catch-up plan. So, Chair, the undertakings that we've made going forward were that we needed to develop a turnaround plan, which we have done, and that managers must take responsibilities, make sure that we comply, we achieve what is on the turnaround plan, and that we deliver on strategic objectives. We agree that we have to fill the vacant positions as a matter of urgency, but within the budget, and also to review the APP to ensure that the targets are realistic, they are smart, they are measurable, and attainable. Also that the diligence for the relevant programs will make sure that their programs, the targets in their programs are fully monitored on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, top management sits and reflects on how far this unit is on different areas. And then, Chairperson, I'd like to ask the CFO to present a budget for the expenditure.
Can I just come in and say, I think in the meeting where we present our annual report, we did say that we have a problem. Why we have come on the turnaround is that we sat down with the Ministry of Finance. We looked at the problems within the department. First of all, we have had about 10% of the personnel that we require in terms of the public service and administration department because of budget concerns. Secondly, as the report of the Auditor General clearly stated, the accounting officer failed to ensure that he manages this department properly. In terms of the Auditor General, we had no duty. In terms of National Treasury, we had no duty. We had no human resource management. As a result, there were no evaluations and assessments of that. People were just speaking, and in terms of following up and assessing, which are the things that must be driven by the accounting officer, that quite clearly did not happen. Thirdly, Chairperson, I reported during that meeting to the committee that most of the people that we have in the department are not qualified. They are people that have been put in, for instance, HR, a lot of people. For instance, in general, the cooperative management plan is overloaded with people that are probably not even qualified. Now, we're speaking with those people, HR and CFO, the former CFO, who resigned, of course, in June, just before the Auditor General finished his audit. They were also using my
money and the management of the finances was not proper. We had problems of PFMA, which we did report, which also appeared, was emphasized by the Auditor General. We had problems of alleged fraud in the department, alleged nepotism. This is why certain vacancies had to not be filled, because we had to employ friends or whoever we liked in positions that were not necessary, because probably didn't have the qualifications for where we needed to go. So, unfortunately then, the accounting officer is no longer able to come and account to Parliament for all these problems. However, we have conducted an investigation. We shared the report of that investigation on the committee. We are acting on the findings of that investigation. We are acting on the findings of the Auditor General. So the picture that we're seeing now is the picture of a department that was soft with its management and alleged corruption. So we are acting on that picture. We have suspended a number of officials. Hearings are going on right now. Some of them have already gone for sick leave to say they are not available for the hearing because they are depressed because of the work that they are doing. Others are demanding this document and that document and that document so that they can delay the hearing as much as possible. But I want to assure honorable members that heads are going to roll. And we're going to rebuild this department. We're going to ensure that our HR, our finances, we've already advertised for it, director, we've advertised for audit committee, internal audit, deputy director general, and we've advertised for people that must come for and fill the vacancies in supply chain management. Because those were the weak departments where, in my view, people were just sitting there. They didn't want to put in the sitting so that they could off. That was going on there in terms of supply chain management, in terms of the PFMA, and continuing at infinity. So we are acting on those, and I'm sure very soon we'll have people to look at this. We'll have proper supply chain management, we'll have a full-time VFO, and so on, so that we begin to deal with the problem in the systemic problem in this country. We have, are working with National Treasury Directors. We have been given officials from National Treasury who are now helping us to ensure that we have systems in place. I think we should have put it in that. We have systems in place, and we also have people in the finance department who are helping us to ensure that we have systems and we comply with the recommendations of the Auditor General. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman.
I think the recruitment is late. I said we have asked management for this supply chain. That is in place, but the honorable member, I don't disagree with her. We can include all these things when it comes to the sports next year.
The minister alerted us to, or she referred to the report, and we know what report that is. I'm not even that it's a flux report that is needed for the conduct. I also scrutinized that report. What came up in our mind was the officials that are now implicated in this report. And the minister just said now that some of them are on sick leave, some of them are on this document and that document, and it may take a long time to finalize that, the issues in the report. Those people who have been in service of the department, they are now out of their position. Are there any other people that took up these positions as to allow the work of the department to proceed or to be implemented so that they can now achieve the goals? Because that vacancy, if nobody was put in place in that vacancy, surely there is going to be a vacuum, and that might contribute to not achieving the turn of the goals of the turnaround strategy in the department. And then I'd also like to know, we know what the financial position of the department is. Are these people that are not at least implicated in the report, are they being compensated for or not? Because that can also have an impact. They are not in service, yet they are fast getting their salaries or not. And we as a committee are expecting the department to achieve what they told us in the turnaround strategy. Just for clarity.
Question that you asked, Honourable Chairperson, and the question asked by the Honourable Namula. I think we need to thank the Minister for her frank assessment and also the comments that we are rebuilding the department, we want stability. But you know, Chairperson, one of my biggest concerns is that we are currently addressing through the turnaround strategy. We are going to address issues, for example, in finances, in supply chain management, and those are all vital issues to bring stability back to the department. But you know, Honourable Chairperson, I would like to know what is going to happen in the core program, because if you look at the annual report, I can't remember to pick it off by heart, but I think in the children's program we only have 9 staff members, in the disability program we have 13 staff members, and I think what we need to hear, and this is really also a point on clarity, because I think for the Minister it's going to be very difficult for this department to reach its target when they've only got those 3 staff members in those core programs. And I would like to know from the department what do they actually envisage doing, because I think as a committee we need to also, these are critical matters, because without those core staff members in the core program, it's going to be very difficult to achieve the targets. And I know that the park only now has received money to fill vacancies and financial management, supply chain management, but that is really an area of concern for me as well. What are we going to do about the critical vacancies in those school programs? If I could just get some clarity on that. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you very much. Okay. It's very next question. You know, I'm not surprised by who honors the relevant. But mine is to, I don't know, mine is to check with the minister. What makes it so difficult to bring these officials to come to Parliament to account? More especially the accounting officer. It is so difficult to bring that official to account. You know, for me, the back stops the minister. What if the minister, for me, it seems as if she's afraid or she's, I don't know. And I want to check with her also, what is the time frame of all these issues to come to an end? We are ready, we're going to our next time, or we're going, maybe after 2040, we'll still be sitting with this, irrespective of some of us will be here. It seems as if this thing comes from 2009. So, please, can I just get a clarity around it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is just a shock. Because I just was talking to the department, so it's not done something. I want to add to all of the men of this man that this is a department of the because we already started to keep someone in. Because this is a this is January, 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 now in December. We are almost to all of us. Maybe the state head of the balance to make sure that the data is to give us a professional. Now we are discussing this document. And we said, go back and then to what this is doing to the and give us a full report. Let us see this. Because they already said, and we said, a company to address the phone. There was a pressure for us to do that. Here, this document says,
I'm happily cut off by the previous speaker. As a committee, you see the problem that the minister is encountering. I would ask you, what is the position of this government at the present? As the minister says, the others that are sitting, others want the government. Are we, as department, in a progress of trying to fill up the spaces of those who have just left or those who are sitting? What's the present picture of the department at this moment? Because the chair said, the time around stretch, I don't think we have any new project. If we don't have staff, and then who's going to do that? My suggestion is, the minister just at least, I agree with my neighbor here, that we can give the minister a chance to go into the minister. But what is the present situation of her department at the present moment? Are those people still there? Are we waiting for these things to be solved? Then we can go back to the general strategy. Because I, for one, general strategy, the department has been there all along. And every minister who comes in comes to bring a general strategy. I do agree with that, Chair. Are we not just a delay? Can't we wait and hear from the minister whether these things should be solved first or should we continue with the general script? Okay.
Thanks to the members. Their concerns are also my concerns. But honorable members, maybe tomorrow some of you will be ministers. And when you are minister, you have a particular role. When the accounting officer does her work, even if she does something wrong, you are alleged to be interfering
if you want to intervene. So things will happen. By the time you realize that things have gone completely wrong, well, it was the work of the accounting office. If you ask questions that you want to check who is employed, how they are employed, you are interfering. I'm sure members have seen it in the newspaper that I was interfering in the department because I noticed that people who have criminal records have been employed by the DG. People who don't have the qualifications have been employed for senior management levels. Some of the posts, as I said, were left vacant for more than a year for no good reason. Like, for instance, the internal audit. So, in some cases, I myself had to go and sit in interviews to make sure that we get the right people. Because I was already afraid of what is happening in the department. But that was called interference, not allowing the accounting officer to do her work, to take decisions, and so on and so on. However, yes, I was talking about June, the second quarter, when I was seeing people are just sitting that were still under the AG, under the DG, under the CFO, where really there was no proper assessment, in fact no assessment of the senior officers was done. The policy for most of the systems were not in place. And we have been sitting with the Auditor General in meetings where we were asking the DG and saying, let's come with a plan. Let's ensure systems are in place. The DG and the CFO say, yes, we're working on this. Yes, the systems are in place. At some stage, the AG told me, Minister, your people are not telling the truth. Anyway, this is where we were, as I said to the Honourable Member. But where we are now, since September, as I said, we have worked with the Ministry of Finance. We are also assisted by Statistics South Africa, who have brought in a team that is working in the department to replace those vacancies of people who are suspended. Some have just jumped the ship and resigned. Some ask for the transfers and so on. So those vacancies, especially in finance and so on, we have ensured that there are people acting at the moment, seconded by Treasury, seconded by Statistics South Africa. In terms of core vacancies, those were some of the vacancies that we were given funding, extra funding. I think members were voting last week. Where we are now advertising those posts, not only the finance, but also the core, like disability and so on. And we are hoping to interview those people before the end of the year, so that early next year we can have those core vacancies as well as the administration and finance filled up. In terms of the people not qualified and the we are doing a skills audit as we speak. But during a skills audit, we've also asked SACA to come and check qualifications for all the personnel in the department. Once we get the reports of the skills audit through Department of Public Service and SACA, we will be, because we also are tied by our labor laws. Once I get this letter and it says I am CEO of the CDB. I'm sorry, I'm not referring to the CEO. I'm not taking an example. This letter will go to court and untied. Because this letter is signed by the accounting officer of this department. There's nothing much I can do. You knew that I don't have my chief, making an example, but appointed me as a director. Letter. This is senior management. So it's not the fault of the employee. The fault of the employee. So we are sitting with that challenge, but I'm saying we're doing a skills audit, we're looking at qualifications of people, then we can deal with people in terms of the findings of that investigation and of the audit, his audit, maybe we can redeploy some of those people. But if you came as you were deployed and you didn't have the qualifications, then we can act against you. In terms of those that have suspended, are they compensated? Yes, people have been suspended from September this year. In terms of the labor law, again, the Public Service Commission says suspension is paid. So, unfortunately, we don't have a choice in that regard because again, we'll be taken to court. So these are laws, and as the members will know, that we have to obey ourselves because we have passed this law. Bringing the accounting official to account, I think the accounting officer is no longer in our department. She's in the Mpumalanga province, but I do believe Parliament has the right to call any person to come and account if they so deem or they deem necessary for public funds or whatever. That is the power laid to you by the on you by the Constitution of South Africa. Thanks, Honourable Members. I think I've answered most of the questions.
Now, having been able to pose this question the way there was a suggestion to say we should use the pattern for us to determine if this is far from doing what is possible. We're not sitting here, and I don't want to make it clear. Unfortunately, we're not shooting that alerted us or put on this issue and I say, why are we betting against this far from the government? And this sometimes may have happened already. And I was told that in the first year it was HR. The second year it was policy, and I was out of it. And the third year it was IT. And you know, it is the fourth year that the upper money. Bearing in mind that we are in the 16 days of activism of violence against individuals, if you think in the public business that we have this year, the priority is so many issues are so much. One thing, and also one thing, that we will be able to achieve for the next generation. That is why I'm calling on the department today. And we need, when I sit, it's the lenient to give them a fair choice. And I'm saying, Ian Swanky, I always like to say this in upfront, Ian Swanky can use woman's heart. One swallow can never let the sun. And if this department did not put in their weight, and we heard what the minister said, truly then we must put steps in place to deal with this problem. We cannot forever and ever, while our women and children and persons with disabilities, also all those special needs, are suffering out there, allow this department to do what they do. And to keep on doing what they do.
Honourable Chairperson, I think I would concur with the sentiments raised that we do give the department more time. I think they've been very honest in their presentation to us. They've come with a turnaround strategy and it has given us hope. So I think we need to go back and tell them that they've got more time and then we as the Honourable Namula said, we will await a detailed report. Honourable Chairperson, I also would like to make a suggestion, if I may, listening to the Honourable Minister about the accounting officer, which is now in Mpumalanga. I think if we have an opportunity again, I think as a committee we need to consider whether we would want to invite this person to appear before us. Because Honourable Chairperson, I'm of the belief that that person has not only let down the minister and her department, but has let down the women and children and people with disabilities of this country. Because if you run a department as this person is alleged to have run the department, you're literally stealing from the most vulnerable people of our society. And therefore I think fulfilling our parliamentary obligation, our constitutional duty, it is incumbent upon us to call that person to come and account. I think it is our role, and I thank the Minister for that input, and I would really like to appeal for this committee to consider that. I thank you.
Somewhere in February, if time allows. Thank you.
why I was saying we must be realistic. Because sometimes you put indicators there that are not actually measurable. And I'm not sure whether you are looking at December as a month. Sitting there when we are talking about December, we count December.
After the 40s, and in January, the most of the people go back after the 7th and then,
so are you saying the end of February?
No.
Not first week of February, it's not like it's not practical. First week of February is not practical. Because we are all preparing for January. Some of us are not here, we are just doing shopping.
Okay.
We are realistic. Member Ramula, I'm telling you what I know in the year in salary. You can't talk about first week of February, you are just joking. It is the only thing. They don't even for it at that time. So can that be on the last week of February? Last week of February. Actually, it's not what it is. Last week of February. No. So, last week of February.
That still needs to finalize, but that's what the type of phase is like. So done, but the meeting is yet to be done.
So it was a member's raised a concern saying, if the other people know on suspension, and say most of them are on in APAC, we will be able to deliver on the turnaround. Actually, on the contrary, we have asked more than that.
Thank you very much. Can we then just hand over to the
Chairperson. I would like to say that we have thought that we'll start off with the CGE amendment so that we can discuss together with what the CGE was presenting. But we will, because ours are just minimal technical amendments. But then it's fine. We'll ask the Deputy Director General to lead us. Ours is a very short presentation on the amendment of the CGE Act. And as I said before, we were just trying to implement the instructions we received from Parliament that we ensure that the bill, CGE Act, is aligned to the Constitution and to PLMA. And we have thought that once all the proposals have been finalized in terms of structure, design, institutions and so on, then we will look at more substantive amendments to the Act. But what was more important was to ensure the bill, I mean the CGE itself is constitutional, because up to now we've been running for many years with a commission that was unconstitutional. Thank you. Over to CGE, CGE for wages is the majority here.
Thank you, Minister. Good morning, Honourable Minister. Apologies, we have not made the public of the presentation. But it is very short for 8 slides.
Finalized the bill months ago and submitted for the speaker. But because it's minor amendment, when the chairperson said we should present, we thought we could present just to highlight the few amendments that we have made and submitted to cabinet.
I think someone must just go in the copies next door. We are not all there by me. Like, we will go on the road.
Amendment, as I said, and we did not want to go into substantive matter. because of the ongoing deliberations and discussions. And we thought there would be a more substantive amendment once those discussions are finalized in Parliament. Thank you very much.
And let me also thank the honourable member. And our meeting is not adjourned yet because we have minutes to peruse and adopt or amend. Oh yes, Minister. It's clever, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. I have asked the chair to give us the opportunity to present the report on the 66th session of the UN Commission on the Status of Women. We have a full report. I do think it's quite thick, but members can read it later on. We have a presentation. We have a presentation that tries to summarize to ensure that we are able to present. And as honorable members will know, the theme for the 66th session, which was held in March 2012 in New York, was the empowerment of rural women and fighting poverty. There were a number of themes that were part of that overall theme of empowerment of rural women. The priority team addressed the following objectives: ensuring that rural women are active in economic and social development, both at local and national level, that they remain disadvantaged compared to rural men and boys, compared to urban women and girls, and know that poverty is mostly in our rural areas and it bears female things. That they lack access to land and productive resources, which are the resources that will help them overcome poverty and hunger. That they continue to have limited access to markets and inadequate health services. That they lack, or the rural areas lack, public infrastructure, including roads and public transportation, water and sanitation, modern energy sources, which hinder rural women opportunities to empowerment. Rural organizations, including farmers organizations and cooperatives, play an important role in giving rural women a voice, advancing their rights, promoting rural development and capacity building for women. Those are the needs that were summed up at the conference. We then also look at what we can do in South Africa, or what we are doing. For instance, intervention programs that South Africa has, and also global attempts and instruments that have been contextualized. We have also developed a priority economic empowerment program, particularly through departments such as the DTI, Department for Rural Development. policies, like the BEE policies, and also the Economic Empowerment Commission, which looks at targeting women and ensuring gender empowerment in the workplace. We have also ensured that we have programs that prioritize decent work, increase infrastructure investment, ensure equal access to and land and rural or productive resources, for instance, water and land. We are talking to the Minister of Rural Development to ensure women have access to land, to promote the establishment of women's organizations, and support also rural women's organizations, and ensure women's participation in planning, implementation, and monitoring of policies, legislation, and programs. We fight to ensure that women are in leadership and decision-making. We are working on gender responsive and accountable mechanisms that will influence policy formulation. For instance, our intervention in the traditional house bill at least had an increase, because this year that law will not pass, and therefore we can be able to go back and mobilize particularly rural women so that they can ensure their heads, their voices are heard. We are also working on the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which has already been endorsed by Cabinet and directed. We are now preparing to bring that early next year to Parliament. We are also working with the Department of Rural Development, as I said, and Agriculture to ensure agriculture for women farmers are empowered and also get support. So those were the reports that we presented. Different departments were also represented, like the Department of Rural Development, Department of Economic of Trade and Industry, who were then able to present the case. Other priority themes included fighting violence against women, issues of lesbians and gays, and what South Africa is doing about their marginalization. I'm summarizing, and I remember you explained yourself. We were able to share a platform with the United Kingdom, France, Argentina, and South Africa, where we were presenting our crisis regarding the abuse, rape, and killing of lesbians and men in the country, and what our department, working with the police and justice, the campaigns that we have been running against so-called corrective rape, but also the laws that we have passed, including our constitution, which is saying that the state feels that there should be no discrimination against people because of their sexual orientation. We also looked at participated in the negotiations themselves. You will see honorable members, they are in the bigger report, resolutions that came on women and aid, resolutions that came on peace and war, and various resolutions where we participated in the negotiations. I'm just pointing now to the conclusion that came. We have agreed on 10 conclusions for the 2008 CSW, which calls for an increased investment in gender equality and empowerment of women. This was discussed particularly where we were looking at gender-responsive budgeting. There were questions that were dealing with gender-responsive budgeting and examples and best practices from countries like Austria, like Morocco, who are doing very well in gender-responsive budgeting, were presented, and we have been able as a result, work with the UN women, with the NGOs and women's organizations, where we are developing our own gender responsive budgetary program. We also looked at positioning gender equality as an institutional priority to increase investment in gender equality and empowerment of women. That is another area where we are looking at funding and budget and working closely with ministries of finance to fund all departments, programs that are focusing on women. We're also looking at increasing the amount of bilateral aid focused on gender equality and agreed that we need to ensure 30% of that is allocated, of aid is allocated towards women. That decision was taken in 2011, which has not materialized globally. So that was an area where we resolved we need to ensure that women at least have that 10% of international aid. Also the development of using tracking systems for financing for gender equality to enhance contribution and also towards women, but also we have to ensure sex disaggregated data and gender specific information when donors fund our countries. So this is an area, as I say, where we are going to work closely with the Department of Finance. International organizations, multilateral development partners, implementation. So in this session, we identify gaps and challenges in implementing the partnership with multinational organizations like the U.S. and others. Over the past 4 years, access by women's organizations to funding has been a huge challenge, and the bilateral and multilateral partners have reduced funding. Most of them have actually cancelled funding, like we are experiencing here in South Africa. Funding for UN women remains significantly below target, and almost 2 years after the establishment of UN women, it still has the smallest budget in the UN system, just like we do. Tools that can be effectively used to measure the quality and impact of development assistance, including evaluation, audits, and reviews, are lacking worldwide. Reporting and monitoring and tracking of systems, we're looking at the UN systems as a whole, and how do we ensure that the funding, the little funding that we are giving out there goes to women. Many women's organizations, especially small grassroots organizations like rural women and service providers, lack the technical capacity to comply with the complex requirements for accessing usually large grants offered by different women. And so on the basis of all these challenges and also experience from some good practices, the following recommendations were made. Ensure that funding from UN Women will enable UN Women to fulfill their mandate effectively. We have to set measurable targets for financing for gender equality as a share of official development assistance. Invest in development and use of tools to assess the impact and results achieved in gender equality through support provided by UN programs and multilateral support. For instance, if we want to initiate in South Africa a gender responsive budgeting program, then the UN or UN Women must assist with tools to do the work, but also with capacity building to train officials not only in our department, but DGs of finance, DGs of trade and industry, their CFOs, to ensure that when they look at their budget, they also do so with a gender lens, so as to ensure the DG of Holy, I don't know if they call them the DG, Commission of Holy, will ensure that crimes against women and children are priority, and the budget that goes to crimes against women and children shows that the government is prioritizing those crimes. The DG for Justice, the Minister has agreed that we open the Special Offences Court. The DG for Justice must then be ready to come up with a budget that will assist us open so many Special Offences Courts, which will help us cut down the backlog that we are seeing in gender-based violence, rape cases, child killings, and so on. So that we can actually see that, because the minister can say these things, if there is no budget, it will never happen. Also, we need to explore approaches for financing for gender equality, such as taxation on financial transactions or public and private partnerships that are balanced and centered on gender equality goals. Organizations and multilateral or bilateral donors to reduce the burden of monitoring and reporting on recipient governments and civil society, so that you find donors, they have very complicated requirements and reports, where you find small NGOs are not coping with all these reports that is submitted. Austria, Cambodia and Morocco present a good model, as I've already said, of implementing the agreed conditions of the 52nd session. As a follow-up to this commission, the UN Women was tasked to set up workshops and training programs that will help member states implement gender responsive budgeting. So as a result of that, and also NGOs, in last month we attended a workshop, which was a training session that was held in Morocco by UN Women, where gender responsive budgeting was discussed, was training from officials from all over Africa, and the officials, the DG from Austria, the minister from Morocco, including the finance minister, they were all there to come and share with us their best practices, and I hope that also we'll be able to move on gender responsive budgeting. We are working right now with the support from Mudita Foundation and UN Women. We have already started with the pilot, and we will come and share the results of the pilot with members. The pilot has four departments: health, energy, trade and industry, and agriculture. Those four departments, but we have agreed that we are going to expand the pilot and reach out to more departments, especially departments like education, rural development, water, those departments that have a big impact on the daily life of women. It was also recommended that the responsibility of involving youth and making them part of the planning process for the successful development of a country lie on the shoulders of many parties, which include government, the private sector, civil society, and various organizations, civil society organizations. It is also important for political parties to give special attention in involving youth and women in order to promote gender equality. As they say, you must start with them while they are still young. This is because political parties are able to provide a lot of experiential opportunities. It's like a training for young people by giving them the opportunity to give public speeches, to actively participate in decision-making by exposing them, traveling and meeting people all over their country, sometimes in other countries, and also involving them in various campaigns. The other recommendation was that we increase gender awareness within political parties, especially at the leadership level, which is very important. We have to sensitize parliament to gender-related issues, and which is another way in which more opportunities can be provided for both women and the youth through legislative process. We must include a clause insisting the existence of a women's wing in each political party, in the Political Party Act, I don't know, other countries, to ensure that women are more active in political parties, as well as forming youth committees or women's committees in political parties. I think South Africa, we already have such factors, more advanced than other countries. South Africa's progress in financing and implementing national priorities for the empowerment of women, we reported on that. For instance, we reported on the National Development Agency Act. We reported on the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, on the Domestic Violence Act, Trafficking, the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, and also the campaign against abuse of women, but also to promote women's respect and dignity. I can see that we don't have a women empowerment. We did report on the women empowerment and gender equality. The other programs and projects that were focusing on education for all children, and we recorded on our No Fee School, and also the Techno Girls program that is being spearheaded by the department and the Department of Education. Of course, other programs that we reported on was the activities that we had, Rural Women, National Women's Day, and other policies that have been developed in the country, and projects that are affecting particularly rural women. Mention was made also of the Women in Water program, which creates jobs in the rural areas for rural women in particular. I think to sum up, honorable members, we have the project on all spheres. As I said, there were issues also on violence against women and girls, which were led specifically by the Deputy Minister of Police and by the Minister of Correctional Services, including issues of gays and lesbians in South Africa, and the policies and legal framework that has been developed in this regard. There is already a project. South Africa also talked about the right of the LGBTI group and what we have done in that regard. Also, that goes into detail. The 1999 legislative framework, the law that was passed on same-sex couples, that is the union for same-sex couples, the Domestic Violence Act. I'm assuming honorable members will read all this and are familiar with all these issues. And also the Marriage Act of 2008 and 2006 reveals the determined commitment of South Africa to ensure that homosexuals enjoy equal protection of the law. And also, South Africa became the fifth country internationally and the first nation in Africa to grant official recognition to same-sex marriage. We also mentioned that we have intervened in some of the countries where same-sex couples were being criminalized, like in Malawi. Our deputy president and our ministers have intervened, and we are working with other countries to ensure that lesbian and gay people are not persecuted. We also reported that we are in the process of setting up the National Council Against Gender-Based Violence, society huge scares of violence against women in women and children in South Africa, which will be led by the deputy president. We will launch that on the 10th of December, just for information, on the 10th of December, when we close the 16-day campaign for no violence against women in Rustenburg, led by the deputy president. We were commended on the progress we have made on gender transformation, in leadership positions in parliament, but we were really given a high for the high level of gender-based violence in South Africa. I would like to leave it there. I think honorable members will agree most of the report for example. I must also include Chairperson that you led a delegation from Parliament which also participated in the Inter-Parliamentary Union. We also had a delegation of NGOs because this was about rural women who were funded by the UNDP, UN Women, who presented the NGO forum. We also had the CGE, I think, yes, were represented and had their forum on independent commissions. I don't know what they call it, but we had that delegation and the Minister of, the Minister of Police, who were leading on the gender-based violence issues and the lesbian and gay program, and also the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, who was leading on the economic empowerment of rural women and cooperatives and what we have done in the country. Thank you, Chairperson. I've tried to summarize. Just to add that next year, honorable members, the commission will sit in March, and the theme for next year, priority theme, is elimination of all forms of violence against women and children. So this is the way South Africa is required to report and all other member states. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I think the report is well covered because we were part of this conference and indeed the World Delegation from Parliament, which also was able to come with the report which was presented in Parliament and adopted. Members, any comments? Member Simani, Member Lamour, Member Sandamer, Member Soda.
Thanks very much, Mr. President. Mine is just a comment, and thank you, Minister, for making us an excellent report. From slide 6, the last bullet, where it says the rural organization, the farmers, what the organization of it is, they play an important role in giving rural women a voice. I would suggest that maybe the department itself should monitor the small, I'll quote, but I'll make an example. One of the organizations being traditional leaders. I think, to my observation, they are not doing enough. I just want to share maybe what happens in time and permission, particularly
one of my frustrations for one of the rural areas, where during the traditional bill, I approach my father to go and share this bill at Khotla. What informs me is when I say the traditional leaders are not being enough. I'll share with you, my dad was so furious, was so angry to such an extent, he promised me that before I arrived, because there is this thing of, as a woman you are not allowed to approach the Khotla for a certain reason. He promised me that before I can be disciplined by the Khotla, he'll be the first person who's going to discipline me. In a nutshell, I'm trying to say, you could see from my dad that he's not informed. No one, traditional leaders are not being enough to share with the leaders from the rural areas. Then you ask yourself, how many women are at a disadvantage in terms of giving the information in terms of the traditional gospel and so on. So my proposal is, please, can this be monitored and maybe also in other organizations? Thank you.
I'm deeply interested in the issue of education. I also propose this in my budget, which is knowing how many things to do for us and how to provide us with it. And then, our department is in the department of education. I'm like the minister, if I'm to say, what is the first child now, if I was to bring their piece of faith to the table so that we can have a in challenges that the department faces, by improving what he needs to do as a life of mentor and as a disability. I can assure you, I'm only nothing at implementing departments, but we cannot walk the road alone. We need to be better than we need our line partners. So the essence of line partners is that we must be emphasized. And then on strengthening agricultural research and economic empowerment of the most important of your institutions, it really works. And one does not need a lot of money. We do not need a lot of resources. We start in the Tunas area by offering national level seats. Not even wheelbarrows and spades, only seats. We borrow wheelbarrows and spades. And we started 3 years ago by just giving each and everyone enough of those sort of amount. Small level of seats, which is national area. Beetroot, carrots, pumpkin. But that is board. Is that a vegetable that goes? And believe me, today we have 65 sustainable vegetable gardens in my area, which is a great example, and 6 sustainable communal vegetable gardens. And it's really, you know, people are now beginning even to plant on the sidewalk the cabbage and spinach with also farming. It is really making a difference to those lives. They are so proud of those women. And whenever I visit them, you know, even if it's 2 weeks, but we do that to them, just to show me that they are also proud of what they have achieved. So that is a really important thing for our rural areas, especially us being in one of the poorest towns in the world. It's working very well. I'd like the minister to really emphasize that with national, but it's important he is working very well with us on that. And the provincial one can come here, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Master, thank you to the Minister. I think this is a valuable information, you know, very valuable, that actually giving empower our members who are to engage with other departments, you know, in terms of their roles, you know, in contributing or bettering the lives of women. Thank you,
very much. I want to thank all of the members. I have asked my department to organize a meeting with traditional leaders. And I hope you will come and attend that. Your father comes. Okay. So because we have realized there is a problem, because honorable members, we accept that in our constitution, traditional customary law is recognized. In our constitution, traditional leaders are recognized. So we can't wish them away. But we are saying we have to transform that system. We have, for instance, in Northwest, the premier told me the other day to say there are two women that are being refused to be appointed as chief because the Malume or whoever who are the regents is now refusing to step down because this young girl was still growing and studying at university. Now she's back, she's finished, she's ready. The Malume is refused. So they accept it. Using this thing that is a woman and so on and custom and all that. So we have huge challenges that we have to engage with the traditional leaders. The same issues of Ubutwana, the CDE in project, I think last week, that 22 girls have been Twala in Guadalina. 22 girls. Now you ask yourself, where are these girls? What about their school and their future? What about their health? Because basically what it means, little girls are raped every day. Some of them get inflammation and become sick. Nobody takes them to the doctor. They continue with the rape. So I think those are some of the issues really that we need to address as this community. Sexual offenses cause, thank you, another member. Because it is very important. Yes, I will work with the Minister of Justice to say, let's see the budget. Let's have the target. Are we starting with 60 calls or with 100 calls? What is the target? But the committee has more power because the committee can call the Justice DG to say, where is the budget? When are you starting? What is your target? So as to assist us, fast-track the establishment of these courts so that we can honestly cut the backlog that are sitting in terms of justice, in terms of gender-based violence, race, and all. One girl was saying yesterday, I've been going to court, I was raised, I don't know when, two times the case has been postponed. The last time she was there, it was proposed to next year. And she was saying, I'm giving up. I'm giving up. And why should I go to that court again and not get any feeling? So I think it's important that we follow up as a committee while we do what we have to do in the department, but the committee must monitor and make sure that these things are happening. I also want to agree with the Honorable member about vegetables, gardens, they are so important. Food prices are skyrocketing. When I was the Minister of Agriculture, I used to say one household, one garden. Because at least you don't have to buy spinach and carrots from PMK. You can even add five in there, and have your eggs, five chickens. Have your eggs for the little children, and you don't buy everything. So if we can go into our constituency and encourage women, you don't have to have your beautiful lawn all over the house. You can have your small lawn, but somewhere must have your vegetable garden. Because we don't eat flowers and grass like cows. But roses are nice. They have a corner of roses, but most of the land we must use for those gardens. I think also, yes, I want to say that we're working very closely with Minister Wendy also, and he's very committed to supporting women. But as usual, sometimes our officials, so it's important that as a committee, because about the vision the minister has actually implemented, because otherwise, if it is just the department, sometimes it takes too long, because they don't go to the constituency. Maybe they don't see the pay, but they get the salary at the end of the month. But our people out there are waiting and waiting and definitely can't wait for it. Thank you very much, honorable members, and I'm sure maybe next year we will continue to report on some of the work that we are doing to implement the resolution of this conference. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, I'll propose, I'll come up with a proposal because, again, there is a critical area where we didn't address. It's the church. I don't know how we're going to approach the church. But I'm saying this because all this music comes in terms of the scenario which we're encountering. There are some of the churches where there are rules which have to be obeyed. You may find that one of the rules will be saying you don't commit. I'm sorry, we are just, there are rules where they will say you are not supposed to do 1, 2, 3, 4. What I'm trying to say is you may find that the rules only work for women but not for men. There was an incident where a man and my husband, they went out of the rules. But instead of punishing both of them, they only punished a woman. Remember, the church elders were only men. To a certain extent, people, the woman was exposed because she was wearing what is church gown or galaria shirt. Then people will ask, why is she not wearing a galaria? Something like this gown. Then people will say, it's because she had COVID. And, you know, something. But the man was wearing this gown. So I'm trying to say that we have to have what is, you know, equal justice when it comes to churches. Never mind Murudi God or whatever, only men, but when it comes to the rules, it may apply to both men and women. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
I think it's very the same also in culture. A woman is expected to wear a black dress when her husband dies. The man doesn't wear anything, they even wear the girlfriend after the funeral. So, when we were setting up the council, we also all organizations and government departments, including religious organizations, including traditional house of traditional leaders, and the Contralata, and the SACC, those are the only ones above that to know. They have not given us names yet. So I'm saying it's a difficult sector, but also with the women empowerment and gender equality team, we're saying they are not excluded in terms of empowering women and gender equality. We are saying they should also be monitored in terms of that thing. But we need to find a strategy. Of course, we are following up because we want them to be part of this country. But some of the abuses, the chiefs themselves, they are the ones that are exiting our followers out of their homes because abangene, abangene. So I think we need to involve them to be part of this program so that they can begin to understand and to correct all the practices that have been suppressing women and oppressing them over time. But it's going to be not easy to deal with culture and religion. It's not something that you can turn around overnight. So it's something that we all have to work on. The approach, myself and the chair go to the Catholic Church. Many years ago, we set up a Catholic women's desk. wanted a hotel for women. That was so dumb. So we have to go to Parliament. So I think we must understand that that is a big challenge. So we need to find strategies, but we cannot afford to exclude them. Well, when we started to work with men, at least they are progressive men, but also involving the deputy president in the council. We want role models that men and our own can actually look up to and say, men should not abuse women, men should not beat up women. I want to be the president tomorrow. I want to be a doctor. I want to be Nelson Mandela. And this is how I can be gay. That is the beginning, but we should all work on it.
Thank you very much, Minister. You know, these issues are so huge and many that, you know, if we can start talking about them, we can talk until tomorrow. But we know where we come from, and it's always the best time. One by one, we will get there, you know that we are. It's the same as fighting apartheid, you know. They are very resistant. You know, with some of the, our men changing. So must help them and change them along with us. Even in our committee minister, because I always say that, you know, the issue of gender is not only the responsibility of this committee. In other committees, you know, other committees, women sit in different committees. But they sit there and keep quiet when nothing, you know, is done. That's the legitimate. You know, anything that takes place in any portfolio committee has a bearing on women. So it's not only the responsibility of this committee, but thank you very much. As I've already indicated, that, you know, these reports, I think they are very important because they actually, you know, give us tools, instruments to engage with other departments. Without much ado, I think we have come to the end. Thank you very much for your contribution, Mr. Thank you very much, Mr. I know that I'm detained for the whole day, but the business is not over yet because we can't live without, you know, adopting the materials you are living. Member Lamar. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.